Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. So I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If I wasn't a counselor, then I actually would have been a house flipper. And I always joke with people that being a marriage and family therapist, I'm kind of in the renovation business. Instead of renovating houses and spaces, I'm renovating relationships and helping to take like something that looks like really there's no possibility to something that becomes beautiful and a safe and cozy space that we want to be with. But I have had a love for design, and Jeff and I do a lot of hospitality in the work that we do. So I get a tap over there. Maybe I'll get to do it in my retirement someday. So today I love this topic because the word home means so much in our stories. And as I'm working with people in recovery, oftentimes people just have never had a place to call home. For me, I moved a lot as a kid, and I didn't realize how much having a space that's consistent and feels like I can breathe really has been a part of my own healing journey. Today, we're going to talk about a little bit about our spaces and our stories and how those align. So I have Ann Lynn with us. Her expertise and her voice, I think, is going to be fun for you to hear today. She's a dynamic interior stylist. She's celebrating all kinds of things, especially her latest book, Forever Home, Moving Beyond Brokenness to Build a Strong and Beautiful Life. She's got an expanding influence on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. She's got a successful online shop, The Huga Shop, and she lives in a renovated 1940s fixer-upper with her husband and adorable corgi, Ollie, which we might meet along the way in the interview if you hear him talking. So this is really what we're focusing on most today. It's just how our homes are an important part of our story. And Anne's story is inspirational as she's done a lot of her own work. It's so good to be with you today, Anne. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tara. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, you know, Jeff's sad he's missing out on this conversation. He's actually right now, which is so funny. It's nothing to do with homes. But he's tenting it out in the world, in the wilderness.
Got it.
But we do love to ask our guests to tell us a little bit about their story and what's influencing their message and their call on their life today. And I know you share much of this in your book. Help us understand a little bit more on the brokenness side of your story first before we move towards the hope.
Yeah, wow. I mean, where do we even begin? Life is just so filled with brokenness, and I feel like my journey, even after meeting Jesus, was kind of a roller coaster. So I guess it all began when I was born in a small rural village in Vietnam. It's more like a district that nobody talks about. It's in the outskirts of Saigon, and it was beginning to become more industrialized around the time I was born. So all of these kind of toxic facilities were being built. And at the same time, though it was bad for the environment, it gave the people who lived there jobs. And one of those people who got a job was my dad. So though I was born in extreme poverty, and I'm talking about like something similar to like a mud hut, like they just scrapped together all of the materials they could find to build a makeshift home. When he got a job, he quickly got promoted thereafter because he was so good at what he did. He was an agricultural engineer. So once he got a job, we were able to save up some money. And then when he got promoted, we moved, or built rather, a concrete home. And our family was on the up and up. So if we were to stay there, I think I would have had a pretty peaceful and stable childhood. But instead, we just packed up and left to Pasadena, California. And it was pretty shocking, to say the least, because I didn't know what to expect. I was about like 4 or 5 years old at the time. I had only heard really outrageous things about America in a good way. Like, people were hyping it up so much that at 5 years old, I thought I was going to walk into like a candy land, you know, but instead I came to Pasadena, and it was like a very funny experience. But I was optimistic. My parents, however, their dreams were quickly dashed, and we found ourselves shoved into my aunt's tiny bedroom, having to start all over again. I mean, they gave their house, the new house that they built, to a family member and came here with like 2 tiny sticks of gold. And so we didn't have anything. And then from that tiny little bedroom, we moved on to an apartment, and then a garage, and then a back house. And we just kept on moving. And every time we moved, we had to start all over again. So even as a child, I really had to get accustomed to all of these transitions. And during these transitions, the most traumatizing thing was just seeing my parents' marriage deteriorate, and seeing their health deteriorate. At a certain point, both of my parents were in the hospital for health problems. And me being an only child, I would just kind of be stranded at random family members' homes. So that was just a very confusing, tumultuous time in my life, up until I turned 11 and we bought our first family home. And we were so proud of it. We were so dead set on never moving again. And we rolled up our sleeves and started renovating it together as a family. And I think a few months, like 2 or 3 months into the renovation, my dad got diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. So once again, we had like the rug just, you know, pulled out from underneath us. And 3 months into his diagnosis, he passed away. It was just so quick. And nobody knew how to react to it. And me and my mother were just left to kind of figure it out on our own. My mom having this brand new mortgage to deal with, despite not having an actual job and not speaking the language. And me being fresh into teenhood, like I was like turning 12. Not having a father, and also no longer having the same relationship with my mom. So that experience just catapulted me into just sheer brokenness. Like, if you could only imagine not having a home that you can feel safe in, and having the only person who is supposed to protect you instead harm you in so many ways. I was so confused. And so, like any, you know, hurt teen does, once I got into high school, I hung out with the wrong crowds. I got into all sorts of substance abuse, started dating an abusive guy. And once that relationship imploded, I decided to just trash myself at any parties that I could find. Keep in mind, at this point, I was not religious at all. I was pretty much agnostic, but I had no interest in religion. So I was very helpless and hopeless. And during one of those crazy house parties that I was at, and I was just drugged up in every sense of the word. I remember stumbling into a stranger's car that night, and then the car filled up with all of my friends, and then it took off into the night, and they started blasting techno music really loudly. And there in the back seat, I just sobbed and had a come to myself moment. And I thought, wow, nobody truly loves you. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, the lowest point I had ever gotten to that point in my life. But that was when I encountered Jesus, right in the backseat of that car. He gave me a vision of the painting of him that my mom had in all of our childhood homes. She had always never failed to bring along the altar that she had to each and every home that we lived in. And so when I was sobbing in that car and I thought, nobody truly loves you, I saw that altar. I saw the image of Jesus, and I felt this comfort just wash over me, over my entire body. And I had never felt that kind of peace and comfort before. And I mean, long story long, school day, I contacted the only Christian friend I knew and told her the story, and she lit up and invited me to her family church where her brother was teaching that Sunday. And I just fell to my knees and gave my life to Christ.
That's incredible. And I can imagine somebody listening as a reminder that honestly, with, you know, their own kids, their own teens and adult children who have just really gone so far and to go, there's nowhere. Psalm 139 says God will go to the depths. He's there anywhere to reach us. And so, yeah, that's a powerful story. And you can hear a lot of the hurt and the loss and the reasons why maybe you were coping in that way. We call those maladaptive coping strategies, you know, the drugs and the relationships. But we're after love, and we're after some sense of purpose and meaning and safety. I heard that word. So much happened to you beyond your control, which is similar to most people's stories in our childhood. So along the way, you meet Jesus, and then and you had a little bit of renovation experience in those early childhood years, even with your dad before he passed. So talk a little bit about how did you move into you doing the work that you're doing and bringing inspiration through home design and renovation, which I'm kind of a geek and have been nerding out on your stuff lately since I saw you on our queue. I love it. You've got a great eye.
Oh, thank you so much. I love that we have the same interests. That's so cool. And that you really do renovate people's lives. So you've been doing this way before I even discovered it. But I never intended to get into this industry. I actually studied English to become either a teacher or a copywriter. And it was circumstantial that I found myself in the home decor niche. It was after college that I moved back to my mom's house, expecting her to be really proud of me as a fresh college graduate and all that. But instead, nothing changed. And we were back into our toxic cycle. So the first thing I decided to do was to transform my childhood bedroom. I just could not stand living within those same walls anymore. It made me feel so suffocated and traumatized that I decided to just cover it up with all of these like vibrant, neat wallpaper that I found. And it really helped. And so since that helped, I thought, oh, maybe I should save to, you know, get a new desk and then save to get a new bed. And even though these things were material, they had such a profound impact on my soul and my well-being. And that kind of intrigued me. I didn't like pursue it seriously at that point, but it intrigued me. I'm like, oh, wow, it kind of helped. That's really interesting. So when I saved enough money to move out on my own, I use one full paycheck to transform my studio apartment into this like modern loft or industrial loft that I envisioned using just wallpaper and like the cheap stuff that I found on Amazon. And I took a photo of it and posted it on my Instagram just for fun to show my friends. And it took off. It kind of like exploded a little bit. And I was shocked. And so I posted more photos and it took off again. And so that was when I realized, ooh, this is a fun hobby. You know, I could do this more often, but I was still keeping my copywriter job. Didn't think too much about the hobby that I had. But then slowly but surely, these companies reached out for sponsorships and I began monetizing it little by little. And then before I knew it, the money from the sponsorships were more than what I made at my day job. So I was able to quit my day job not long after that and pursue home decor full time on Instagram. But just because, you know, it's creatively fulfilling didn't mean that it was spiritually fulfilling for me. So I burnt out pretty quickly. And I was like, oh no, I just quit my job. Why do I already not want to do this anymore? So I decided to take a month off of posting and just pour myself into getting inspired. So what I did was I signed up for some like Skillshare classes and I signed up for anything that I could to teach me videography and try to find a new way of preaching the gospel that hadn't really been done before, that I hadn't seen before. And I remember during that time, I had a very strong and specific conviction to start a garden somewhere desolate. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, I probably should be in downtown because that's a pretty desolate city. So I found a high-rise apartment in downtown, and the first unit I saw, I just knew. I just had a feeling that like this was where I was supposed to be. And I never had that kind of like confirmation before. So I sold my car to have some backup money and moved into the apartment and filmed my first YouTube video with the videography skills that I learned. And the first video did okay, but the second one just took off and launched my YouTube career as someone who shares her devotionals while doing home makeovers. It's a very specific niche that somehow connects with people. And I think it's because they feel safe being invited into someone's home while having kind of this, disarming discussion on usually triggering topics like religion. So yeah, I guess that combination worked out.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fun to hear your journey and how normal it is to burn out in being a social media influencer, especially on the younger emerging leader side of life. Most of us more seasoned are fighting it, but there's just a pace that it calls for. And so I love that you took a break and you pulled yourself away. And in that break, there was inspiration and often in the silence and solitude and kind of the creative spaces, God's speaking to us and it allows us to move a different direction. And look, something new and fresh came.
We just want to take a moment to tell you about Living Wholehearted. We are a wonderful team of professional counselors and executive coaches who come alongside leaders helping you live with integrity in every area of your life.
Yeah, so our newest member, executive coach, leadership consultant, Joe. Joe has got over four decades of senior leadership experience. He's a CEO of CEOs in companies like Verizon, American Airlines, Accenture, and others. Joe is, there's not been a fire or a situation that he hasn't experienced in his decades of senior leadership. And so we love having Joe. Joe brings a quality that I can't bring. I've got a few gray hairs here, but he has a seasoned leadership experience and decades of it. So that's Joe.
Connie has been a writer. She works with women in all sacred and secular spaces. She's got four kids. She knows what it's like to be running a career as well as running a home. And she also has launched churches. She understands ministry and work life. She's an incredible executive coach. Rhonda has 30 plus years working as a pastor herself, and she is spending her retirement working on helping pastors and ministry leaders not only develop leaders in their own systems, but to help with sabbaticals and learn rhythms of rest. So you can find more about our coaches, Rhonda at Living Wholehearted, Connie at Living Wholehearted, Joe at Living Wholehearted, and obviously Jeff and Tara at Living Wholehearted. You can go to livingwholehearted.com to read their full bios. But know that if you are a leader and you're looking for something that's more holistic, not a coach who's going to tell you to do more, but to help you learn and grow from the inside out, both from spiritual formation, trauma-informed mental health, and really evidence-based leadership principles that we know work on the ground floor, we are the organization for you.
So yeah, there is something about home that is really important to the soul. So talk about some of the things you've been learning about that, just from those that follow you and in your own journey. You mentioned that room going back to your childhood home and just how much it was affecting your mental health and your emotional health. And yeah, talk about what you've learned.
Oh, I think the biggest thing I learned is that we do have a measure of control over our environment. Sometimes it could feel so chaotic around us and totally beyond repair, but actually you could start small. And what I learned was start with nooks. So in my book, I have my place of hope, my place of joy, and my place of peace. And these are nooks throughout my home that I've created just for me. Just so I can slow down and be present again. And my place of joy is just like my houseplant wall. I have a houseplant wall that I just go to just look at it, honestly. And it does something to help me regulate. And my place of peace is my tea station that I've built. So it's my daily ritual that I can turn to. And my place of hope is the altar that I erected in my new home as a homage to my childhood altar. And I do my daily devotions there. And it just makes the home feel more intentional. And it's very doable for those who are already overwhelmed by their workload. You don't have to tackle the entire room at a time. You can just create little nooks in your house. And similarly, little nooks in your life, like rituals to remind you to slow down, habits that help you break out of the rat race and just focus more on what matters. So that's what I would, you know, advise people to do.
Yeah, I love this so much, Anne, because I'm a mutt when it comes to the denominations of the church, those that follow Jesus, and the denominations. Mm-hmm. And some denominations get really wigged out around any sort of rituals, might put it in a legalistic category or a worshiping of idols. When really, if we look at the Old Testament, you see all kinds of rhythms and rituals. And even Jesus and the apostles reference back to, but they're meant to be a way of pointing us back to and grounding us with who God is and who he says we are. And so this place of, you spend a lot of time in your home. You spend a lot mm-hmm. of time in your home. And so I love that you created these little spaces, these nooks, you call them. And then how much does budget run in interference for people when they're thinking, I would love to do something with my home, but I don't have enough money or time? Speak to that. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, you could pretty much work with any budget. And I say this confidently because the first quote-unquote makeover that I did was actually before my childhood bedroom makeover. I think I moved out. My timeline with moving is all over the place because I moved so many times. But when I was living with a roommate, we were sharing a studio bedroom, and I made over the studio bedroom with $350. That was all of the money I had as a post-grad. And even with that amount, the entire space looked completely different. I thrifted a lot of things. I DIY'd our coffee table by putting four crates together. You know, there are so many creative ways that you can, you know, just allow yourself to explore when you're trying to make over your space. And that's the whole point of it. The whole point is to allow your creative brain, the frontal lobe, to activate again so that you can feel safer and more like you can think more abstractly and ultimately get out of survival mode. So that, I think, is the most important part of this whole journey. It's not the end result, but it's the regulating process of making over something that was once traumatic for you.
I love that. You are definitely speaking in our trauma language. It's, again, the regulating and to be able to comfort and care for your mind and your body and your soul with very intentional things you can control. You know, and we do that by going for a walk in God's creation. I love that you brought creation in with a garden and a green space, that oxygen, the colors. And again, speak to maybe like the variety. What's beautiful to one person or what would feel calming to one person might not fit for another, especially like a family union, husband and wife. Jeff and I, our honeymoon or our newlywed arguments were about home design. I was like, dude, I didn't know you even cared. And he's a musician and an artist at heart. Many people don't know that about him, but he's also a woodworker. So he had all of these bents towards certain things. And if you go to his man cave, he's in heaven, but it makes me anxious. So speak to like the differences between what draws us to peace and more to the Lord and what makes us crazy.
Wow, that is so interesting that he has very specific visions for what he wants in the home decor. But I mean, that's really good. That means he knows himself well and is intentional about creating a space that serves him. But I think, it's a very common conflict to have when you're trying to design for more than just yourself, because everyone has different needs and your space may be limited. So it has to be multifunctional. But the easiest things you can do is to create a color palette that everyone can agree on. And color does so much for our brain. I'm sure you know this more than I do. But when we see more vibrant colors, it makes us feel more activated. We are more motivated. It just makes us feel more alive. But sometimes that could be very overstimulating for a lot of us, because we want our homes to wind us down. The outside world is already activating us, is already making us feel so, you know, overstimulated that we want to come home to a more muted and relaxing space. And for that kind of environment, I would say more muted colors or even neutrals. I know that, you know, sad beige is such a thing right now, but I would never condemn anyone for how they want their home to look, because if it serves them in the way they need to be served, then that's good design. But let's say you have one family member who loves neutrals and one who needs vibrant colors or else they get depressed. What do you do? Well, actually, there are color palettes that could do both. There are muted jewel tones that could kind of work with different people differently. And you can also divide the space up. One wall could have like a colorful mural, and the rest of the home could be more neutral colored, you know? So you can get really creative with designing for different personalities and needs. But at the end of the day, I think it's very important that we take everyone's needs into consideration. Otherwise, they might get stressed out by living in an environment that either depresses them or overstimulates them.
I so appreciate that. And I'm always surprised when people come to our home how they comment on the fact that I allowed both my teenage daughters to create their own spaces in their rooms. I thought that was interesting. I've heard that from many parents. And I think one, probably because I'm a counselor, but also in our home, we want everyone to have a voice and listen to that piece of what they need. And I think it's important for parents to give some freedom for our kids to create spaces that make them feel alive or calm or depending on what they're needing. So I love that you're speaking to that, and color can be a key piece. But, you know, some of us mamas get too hung up on, you know, everything needs to match and needs to be my style. And we've got to think a little bigger about what is home about? What is our environment doing for our mind, our body, and our soul? It's very intentional, so intentional that God even talks about building us a mansion in heaven, a room of many houses, which you point to. So let's end with that. And how has your faith really shaped the way you see home as you think about the homes here today on this earth and then the home that's coming in your forever home?
Yeah, I mean, when I first titled my book Forever Home, I struggled with reconciling that because I know for a fact, it's pretty obvious that this is not our forever home here on earth, right? This is our temporary home. We are temporary citizens here. So what I wanted to reference with forever home is a slice of heaven, essentially. So the house and the mansion that God intended for us to have in our actual forever home could be felt in our earthly home if we invite him into our space and allow him to search our hearts like the inspector that he is, and help us to uncover the things that we didn't know we needed to work on and the things that we need that we didn't know we needed. When we allow the Holy Spirit to do that kind of inspection in our hearts, we are able to be more intentional with what kind of life he wanted us to have and what kind of space helps, I guess, facilitate that kind of abundant life. And I hopefully that's not too complicated of a thought, but I think it really does come down to having that internal spiritual inspections period and then carrying out the suggestions of the Holy Spirit in our physical life.
Do not be afraid to allow him to give us some feedback. It's always done with grace and love and really for our best versus a finger of shame, which is why I think most of us who struggle with listening to God are afraid he's going to come after us with you got to fix this, you got to fix that. But rather him coming alongside and getting to co-design with us and actually see the potential and delight in already what's there versus what needs to be fixed. There's a reframe when we start to go, he has a voice of grace. And we don't have to wait for our heavenly home to start to experience. I love that experience, his presence with us and to be able to move into our current earthly spaces to bring a little bit of that both in our hearts, but also in the places we live. And I just, I love what you're doing. I do want to ask one last question just because I'm sensing the Holy Spirit just asking me, but how do you hear from God? Because you've referenced that a couple times. So that's a hard one for many people. So I'm curious how you explain that. How do you know that he's speaking to you and that he's drawing you towards something like that apartment in the garden in a desolate place? Speak to that for a moment.
I think God, being such a perfect father, knows all of his children to be different. And so he speaks to each of us so differently. And what I've learned is that how God speaks to me is through inspiration and this inexplicable peace, like shalom, where when I am searching for the next right step, as they say, I don't feel shalom over things that are good, but not good for me in that season. And until I see something, a point of inspiration where it just strikes a chord in me, I don't pursue it until I find that thing. And that is how God speaks to me. And it's like very difficult to explain in words. It can only be felt. And I feel like having the Holy Spirit with me through that searching process, through the whole, you know, journey of finding inspiration, continually consulting him, seeing what he thinks about certain interests that I might have. He does speak. I mean, he speaks in your heart, and he even like confirms it through other people. Sometimes my more prophetic leaning friends would literally pull me aside and tell me what they feel like I should be focusing on in the season. I mean, not everyone has that kind of resource, but truly be open to the Holy Spirit's movement. And when you are open to that, you will find yourself being more attuned to it, because God is always speaking. It's only a matter of paying attention to what he's saying. And so I think during those, you know, moments where I'm really searching, I'm super, super sensitive to the Holy Spirit, because I'm like, give me an answer, please. Like, I wake up yearning to know what the next step is. So when you knock, truly the door will eventually be opened. And if it's not according to your timeline, just have the faith that other people might be involved and he's working on other people's hearts, or the, you know, orchestration of it has just not completely come together yet. So you're waiting on God's timing, knowing that he's actively working in the background, and you're not, you know, you don't know what the big picture is. So just have that seed of faith.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Anne. Thank you. So good. And peace, shalom, is an aspect of what God brings to us that many don't experience, even those that follow Jesus, and recognizing that even in our own bodies, we are so used to a slow, subtle buzz, right, of anxiety and intensity, especially for trauma survivors. So recognizing that that can take some time, but the invitation is to move towards that and then be able to discern his peace over the momentary stuff that we go after for a quick dopamine fix. Or so I love that you're speaking to that. And for you, a creative, I'm putting you in that box. feeling is actually a really big piece of that. Mm-hmm. And maybe someone who's more cognitive might have to do a little bit more digging on a pros and cons list with God to hear his voice. But he does confirm to the people in our lives, and he is speaking. It's just a matter of what we're paying attention to. So I love that. Good word. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time today, Anne. Why don't you tell our listeners, where can they find you and all your resources?
You can find me on all the social platforms at Girl and the Word. And I do have this cozy e-commerce shop that I launched not too long ago. It's called the Huga Shop, where I sell like instrumental worship music and just all the products that allow you to cultivate this safe and cozy space. Girl in the Word and thehugashop.com.
I love it. And your book, Forever Home, Moving Beyond Brokenness to Build a Strong and Beautiful Life. You can pick that book up anywhere and probably at her resources as well. We'll have all that in our show notes. And until next time, continue to lean in and to ask God to show you a more peaceful place. And maybe that's finding a nook that you can start to create to draw you more to him. Maybe that's listening to your kids and helping them create their spaces. Or maybe that's being able to actually spend some time to ask him about your decisions. Invite him in to the process of your life and what he's calling you to. All these invitations that Anne's brought us to today. Home matters. The home in our own bodies, the home we live in, and our forever home. So good to be with you. Until next time, continue to grow into the leader you would follow.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.